Welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. My name is Jessie Lowry, and I'm the Director of Conservation and Research. And today we have a very special guest, the Conservation Coordinator here at Blank Park Zoo. And what is your full title, Angela?
Oh, you expect me to remember that, I see. It is now the Coordinator of Curriculum and Conservation.
Yes, and so we're so excited to have you here today, Angela.
Thank you.
And yeah, of course. And I think, you know, what we kind of wanted to do today is just talk about and give kind of a broad overview of all of the conservation activities that we do here at Blank Park Zoo, because there's a lot going on, and not many folks really know the breadth of the work that we do.
And the depth as well.
Yes.
I think, you know, we certainly have a lot of, as they say, fingers in a lot of different pies, but then there's a lot of depth going on for a lot of the projects as well.
Exactly. And so I'll just kind of start off by, again, letting folks know the mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. We want to provide a fun, affordable day out for families around the community. We've surveyed our audience, and we know that that's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
They want to come to the zoo and have a fun day. But while they're here, while the 500,000 people that we have in our audience per year are experiencing Blank Park Zoo, we want to incite conservation actions to encourage them to do something in their own life that's going to make a difference to wildlife populations and wild places around the world. And so that's why I call it a window to the wild, a place where people can come and see these majestic, amazing animals that we have here, like the rare okapi, our beautiful giraffe, the seals and sea lions, and so many more animals.
Let's not forget our Barnaby.
We can't forget our Barnaby, the Aldabra tortoise. He is a local celebrity. And so when people are getting that warm, fuzzy feeling when they see Barnaby out in his yard munching on dandelions, we want to, have them take that next step to do something in their own lives that's going to help make a difference. Because there are a lot of big issues going on right now.
Yep.
I don't know about you, Ange, but I've been taking a little break from Facebook because there's a ton of coverage on the global climate crisis and mass extinctions, and it gets a little doom and gloom. It gets a little heavy for me sometimes.
It can get, even in the work that we do here, it can get overwhelming. And I think for most of us, it's about what can I do today, that little action that will make a big impact. And we can't forget that those little actions really will make huge impacts.
Yeah, my favorite quote from Jane Goodall, I know I've shared this before on this show, but every day we have an impact on the earth, and it's up to us what that impact is going to be. And it's not just fluff. These are a lot of simple actions that folks can take, and they really will add up to change as we wait for corporations to make a change, as we wait for governments to make a change. But, you know, I was talking to one of the zookeepers, Dana, yesterday about this very topic, about all the doom and gloom that's going on. And she said something really fantastic to me that's really helped me. She said, well, is it more doom and gloom or is it more coverage?
Coverage. I think it's more coverage, which is amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
Which made me feel much better and think about it in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
So that immediately kind of changed the way that I was thinking about this, because we do need to talk about it. And you know, we're excited and just honored that Blank Park Zoo, even as a small zoo, can be a leader in inciting those actions and letting the community know both what we're doing here at the zoo and easy ways that they can help. So let's get right to it.
What did one of our local college students dub those? Conservation sensations.
Conservation sensations. I love it. I mean, it really rolls off the tongue. You have to admit. So let's do a quick snapshot of all the different ways that Blank Park Zoo and other AZA accredited zoos save animals in the wild. Of course, AZA is the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. There's 6,400-ish places in North America where you can see animals under human care, and there's only 230 accredited zoos. So your Blank Park Zoo is one of those very highly regarded zoos in the country. And so really it boils down to that a portion of every single dollar that we make at the zoo goes to save animals in the wild in all of these different ways. And so why don't we start off with SSP, species survival plan. Do you want to just talk about that for just a little bit, Angela?
Yeah, you bet. So that's something that AZA has been doing for a long time, and those 230 so collective zoos and aquariums are part of. And that means species survival plans. And those are some of those animals that are either threatened or endangered or might be on the brink of those two designations, and how can we keep them on Earth. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to breed them and turn them out in the wild, because many of these animals cannot be turned out in the wild from human care. But it does mean, like our amazing eastern black rhino, that we're at least going to keep them from going completely extinct from Earth. And so, like our little baby girl that we just had 2 months or so ago now, she has got a big set of hooves to fill regarding that SSP plan. But we're hoping eventually that she can add back to her own species as well. But along with the rhinos here at Blank Park Zoo, some of our other SSP animals are red pandas, though we don't currently have any babies. What are some other ones, Jess? Bennett's wallabies.
Addicts, tigers, lions, basically all of the animals that we have at accredited zoos, all of their breeding is carefully managed. And some folks liken the SSP program to Tinder or some other online dating system.
It is kind of that,
where we match up individual animals based on their genetics to make sure that if they are together and they want to be more than just friends, that they would create robust offspring. And I like to always liken it to an insurance policy against extinction. We're hedging against extinction. And sometimes the animals that are bred in accredited zoos are released back into the wild, but it's very expensive. It's very hard, especially for the bigger mammals who need to learn a lot from their mama and in their natural habitat of how to live. But like you said, Angela, unfortunately, there's not a lot of wild left. Yep. And for the example of Tumani and her little sister, Kamara, eastern black rhinos, of which there's only 800 left in the world, and that's captivity and the wild combined. There is no place to put them back into the wild right now because of the poaching crisis. So as the, you know, the Noah's Ark, you know, concept for zoos talks about, we will keep them safe here and make sure that their species will survive no matter what's happening in the wild. And so, you know, there is a little doom and gloom to that kind of story as well, but we have a lot of successes. We have a lot of successes. And so each rhino and each baby animal that we have here at the zoo gives a huge boost to the global population of these rare animals.
So is that a swipe left or a swipe right
for Tinder?
I don't know either.
I haven't been on Tinder lately.
Me neither. Ever.
Me either. Okay, so SSPs, or Species Survival Plan, is a great way that we help save animals in the wild. It's a cooperative breeding program that we work with all the other AZA accredited zoos, and it's done a lot of good in helping save these species from extinction. We also breed animals and release them back into the wild right here in Iowa. Do you want to talk about our most famous example, Ange?
The trumpeter swans. So, correct my numbers, since I'm just learning some of these numbers, but I believe we've released 36 or maybe even 38 little siglets back into the wild. And though that doesn't sound like a huge number, everyone counts. And remembering that in any one nest clutch in the wild, only one or two are going to survive each year. And so our numbers are still about that same number that would be out in the wild. And we've both seen some really cool pictures of some of our babies when they get collared, and then you see them flying over above, etc. It is really, really satisfying to know that our little zoo in the middle of Iowa has played a huge role.
A huge role in really what is a conservation success story for the entire Midwest.
Yes.
Trumpeter swans, as well as many other species, were prevalent throughout the Midwest, and then mainly because of the draining of wetlands and development of all kinds, but of course for agriculture as well, the species just really plummeted. And so organizations like Blank Park Zoo and other folks around this area helped to reproduce the species, and now the species is doing great. And yes, we did used to put big old clunky radio, not radio, radio collars, but just collars. Identification mm-hmm. collars on their necks. And one of the trumpeter swans that was hatched here at Blank Park Zoo was seen in Oklahoma, and that's always cool.
That is so cool.
We're also involved in a research project where, with all the other AZA-accredited zoos, where we're just taking a quick blood sample of all the trumpeter swans to see what their genetics are, because mm-hmm. they are native animals, and to see if any of those animals' genetics originated from the Rocky Mountain region, because that pocket of trumpeter swans needs a little boost. And so perhaps we can find some of these trumpeter swans in AZA-accredited zoos and send them to the Rocky Mountains to help boost that population.
So are they looking for the genetics to show up that has the Rocky Mountain genetics? Is mm-hmm. that what they're looking mm-hmm. for?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is that it just not really a subspecies, but is it just a little more suited for that area?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
So interesting.
It's just always interesting to see, you know, how zoos can step up and be a part of the solution in so many different ways.
Oh, I can think of one that we don't talk about hardly at all because it's not a huge project, but our vet team has been involved in helping to microchip and after capturing mm-hmm. the DNR has been capturing some river otters so that we know better how they are using their environment and their habitat, and then chipping them and mm-hmm. sending them back out through the DNR. And so our vet team has been involved in that as well, which is really cool.
Because we've got a small staff, but a staff of experts in mm-hmm. all of these different fields. And so we always try to chip in when we can, when there's something happening locally.
No pun
chip
intended.
In. Pun intended. So that's our big example of breeding animals here and releasing them back into the wild. We're also talking with some state and federal agencies about perhaps reproducing some native fish species here that need a little help in Iowa and releasing them back into some appropriate habitat and some oxbows. So there's just a lot of exciting things that we can do as an institution to help release native animals back to the wild.
Awesome.
We also provide a safe haven. And Angela, with your background in education, could you highlight for us a couple education animals that have been rescued and then ended up living their life here at Blank Park Zoo as ambassador animals?
Yeah. So not rescued from the wild, but we have several ferrets that were pets, and then people kind of didn't know what they were getting themselves into and relinquished them. And rather than going and getting them from a breeder or some other option, we choose to try and get our animals from either rescue scenarios, literally, such as places that you can adopt from, or other zoos, etc. And so, although that's not rescued from the wild, that's another good example. We have two little screech owls, eastern screech owls, that were both injured separately in the wild, that they were then rehabilitated at wildlife centers that we have as education animals, as well as our fox Penny, she was actually from California, and somebody, I don't know if it was a hiker or who, found her out in the wild, but she had been separated from mama and was dehydrated. Nobody exactly knows why, but she was just a little baby kit. Mm-hmm. And so she was taken into a rehab. And because she ended up being imprinted on people, which means that she was just going to be probably a nuisance and then not doing a good job at self-caring out in the wild, they chose not to re-release her. And so we have her as an education animal as well, amongst several more.
Can you share a little bit about Jersey? I think that's a wonderful story,
too. Oh, that is amazing, too. Jersey is our very large boa constrictor. I think she is around 12 or 13 feet long, and she came from Hurricane Katrina. Now, Jersey was likely somebody's very large, special pet, and unfortunately probably just got separated because of the severe flooding, and they had tried to reunite her through social media and all those kind of things, but they weren't able to find her original owners, and she was quite sick because she had gotten pneumonia. And in snakes, they have mainly one lung that is functional and one lung that's not functional, and so because of that, pneumonia is even more severe. But she was rehabbed, and then we got her, and she's an amazing girl. She takes two to three of us to handle her because she's such a long girl.
She's
beautiful. Beautiful.
She really is. Yeah. And I'll just add a couple 2 cents here at the end of this discussion, that our bald eagles, And the red-tailed hawk are...
Oh, that's true. I forgot the red-tailed hawk.
Rescued
yep.
animals. So most of the animals that Angela talked about are the education animals that you can see out at libraries and daycare centers and things.
Schools,
things like that. As far as our exhibit animals, the bald eagles are both rehab animals that were deemed non-releasable into the wild. I think they both came from the East Coast with various wing injuries. Of course, you can't have a bald eagle as a pet or in captivity unless it's non-releasable. And so that's a really fantastic story. And then most of our pinnipeds means seals, sea lions, and walruses. Most of our seals and sea lions have been rescued as well for various eye injuries or flipper injuries on the West Coast. Ross, I believe, became imprinted on humans, and folks on the West Coast and fishermen don't usually take very well to seals that are imprinted on humans.
They become kind of large pests, let's be honest.
They're kind of a nuisance, and so this was a great outcome for Ross and his father to pup.
Yep.
So providing a safe haven is just a really important role that modern zoos can play.
And just newly, we have, speaking of the otters, we have two new young otters that were also unreleasable.
Yes, exactly.
Because of, I'm not even sure. What's their story? Do you know
their
story? I'm
not sure of their story either, but they are on exhibit now, it should be viewable when public want to stop by. And otters are extremely fun to watch.
They are. They're fun.
They're a hoot. So I always say, if you want to get the most bang for your buck and helping to save wildlife, you know, working locally is the way to go. And over the past 6, 7, 8 years, we've really focused on local projects. And we can just highlight a few. The first one I wanted to talk about, it's been a couple years now, but over the course of a 5-year time span, we partnered with Iowa DNR to help the Greater Prairie Chicken, an icon of the prairie, translocated back to Iowa. So basically what we did is we went to Nebraska and caught 500 prairie chickens, about 100 per year, from healthy populations and translocated them to appropriate habitat in southern Iowa around Kellerton, Iowa. The prairie chicken needs very specific habitat. It needs to be in a prairie with not many trees, and so it's really hard to find that habitat here in Iowa anymore. But now we have a small but maybe sustainable population, and it's an animal that's just really, really important to the heritage of the Midwest and especially the tall grass prairie.
They also need a fairly large spanse of prairie, too, which is part of the problem as well. I know on one of the females, if I remember the story and data correctly, that she traveled 1,200 miles. Now, that's not linear miles. She kind of went in a lot of circles, but she was actually tracked going into Illinois. So the girl crossed southern Iowa down into Missouri and over into Illinois and then back again. So they
shocked everyone.
Yeah.
And so that's just amazing that we could find out, you know, what kind of behavior could happen.
And I think that's another part is that zoos have played a huge role in recently, and is finding out that information of those wild counterparts, because we don't always know what's necessary. And so if we don't know what the animal needs, it's awfully hard to protect their habitats and or therefore protect them.
That's exactly right. Plant grow fly is another great example of what we're doing locally. I know a lot of folks who are listening to this have heard of plant grow fly. We encourage people to plant gardens, no matter if it's a single pot on your porch or an entire prairie restoration. We believe that no effort is too small. And what we're asking people to do is just plant flowers. Very specific flowers, very specific plants that have evolved over millions of years with our pollinating insects like bees and butterflies and hummingbirds, and put them in your backyard, and you can create this oasis. I have done this on a pretty large scale for a backyard at my house in Norwalk, and just this morning I saw probably 6 or 7 different species of bumblebees, tiny little native bees, ruby-throated hummingbird.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, and it's just a delight. We have over 1,200 gardens registered with the project. So after you plant these special plants, and you can go to plantgrowfly.com or on the zoo's regular website page to find out what plants our native insects need the most.
Ooh, there you go. That's the word I was waiting for, is native.
Native,
so
yes.
We need to make sure that the plants are native.
And tell us why, Ange.
Basically because the non-native plants are going to outcompete. And then also the native insects need native plants. It's weird how nature put that together. But they need a lot of those same native plants like the monarch butterfly with milkweed. And there's a variety of different species of milkweed, but it needs to be native to our region.
So if we're talking about monarchs, like you said, adult monarchs will eat nectar as their food source, but caterpillar monarchs can only eat the leaves of the milkweed plant. It can be any type of milkweed. I think there's about 12-ish native species in Iowa, but it's got to be milkweed. Some insects are much more generalists and can eat lots of different plants, and some are very specific, like the monarch butterfly. And so we're trying to put those host plants especially back into the landscape.
Yep.
And so we do recommend that these gardens are almost all native. We have a couple non-native plants on our list because they will never become invasive.
Correct, yeah.
Because they're annuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they won't outcompete those native plants. And they're prolific nectar producers and will actually extend the blooming time of your garden. And so we include plants like zinnias and cosmos and things like that. And also a lot of gardeners are just familiar with those plants.
Yeah, and they're nice and they're pretty and and they have gorgeous blooms. And I have zinnias in mine. So you mentioned that for a backyard garden, yours is rather large. And I have kind of the converse to that, where I don't have a great spanse of ground to do much with. So I have several potted plants as well as just a small little space that I've converted over.
And speaking of specific types of plants, that's another project that we work on here locally. It's called Upcycle. And we go into local parks, mainly in Polk County, but in other places too, and remove invasive plant species that are indeed outcompeting the native species. I long for the time before I knew about these invasive species.
So
because
do I.
As a conservationist, as a naturalist, you know, when you go out into the woodlands at Brown's Woods or Walnut Woods and you take a hike early spring and everybody is just so excited to see all the green. And then when you know
what
that
it
all
is,
that green is honeysuckle.
Yes.
It makes
or
you sad.
Or mulberry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we need to really start thinking about the plants that we're putting into landscapes, especially in corporate landscaping. A lot of the plants that we're so used to seeing are invasive. And some people will say, well, for example, the burning bush in my yard is not invasive. It's contained. It's not going anywhere. Well, actually, yes, it is,
yes,
because
it
birds
is.
Will come and eat the berries or the seeds of these plants. And then through their digestive tract, they will deposit it in a wild area. And these invasive plants don't have to play by the same rules that our native plants do. And so they'll outcompete for sunlight and all of the other nutrients that, these, plants need. And so the best thing about Upcycle is that all of this plant material makes a great treat item for some of the critters here back at the zoo. And so rhinos and all kinds of animals,
giraffe,
a lot of the African animals will consume these wooded species and chew on them. We use them for furniture and some of the other exhibits. And of course, the goats and llamas will.
Yeah, yeah.
And they eat about anything. So
yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it makes great browse for the larger animals. And we use it for a few of the education animals as well for that browse.
Yep.
That makes, like you said, kind of sweet treats for them. And then it's doing good on both sides.
And there's lots of ways that you can get involved with Upcycle and all these programs that we're talking about. So I'll just mention again, go to blankparkzoo.com. We're always looking for volunteers to help us, especially with the Upcycle event. So let's get to my favorite part, supporting the wild.
Yes.
This is, in my view, one of the biggest things that we can do. The financial and in-kind support of those heroes out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo, and some that we don't. We are supporting financially many projects, including Health and Harmony in Indonesia that protects orangutans and all the other animals that live in that very, very diverse biological hotspot of the world. We support Conservation Fusion that's saving lemurs and tortoises by uplifting local communities in remote villages in Madagascar. International Rhino Foundation that's working in every country in which rhinos exist. A lot of Blank Park Zoo money goes to anti-poaching patrol units and things like that. Tiger Conservation Campaign is working to save Amur tigers, which we have here at the zoo, which there's only 540 left in the whole world. and many other projects like Giraffe Conservation Foundation. A portion of every dollar that we make at the zoo goes to save these animals in the wild, goes right to the world's top scientists for these species in the range countries. And so now it really means a lot.
I want to clarify. So if I come to the zoo and buy an admission ticket, part of that money goes to some of this in the wild work.
Yes.
And how about if I buy an ice cream cone?
Yes.
A stuffed animal?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Jewelry?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I can buy at Blank Park Zoo where some of the money doesn't go?
Nope.
That's amazing.
Riding the train, riding the carousel, coming to Zoo Brew, every single thing means that you are helping us save animals in the wild.
So if you're above 21, talk about that Zoo Brew a lot to exactly. your friends.
Exactly. Exactly. And I've met a lot of these heroes that are working out in the front lines, and, you know,
they are amazing people.
They are so amazing. Do you want to talk about Conservation Fusion and highlight that project a little bit?
Yeah, this is one that we're working pretty tight with right now. So Conservation Fusion, as Jesse talked about, is a group from Madagascar, or working in Madagascar. The gal who started this amazing work is actually a former zookeeper out of Omaha Zoo, so just neighbors to us, if you will. And what this organization does is, right now we're working with them to build Dream School 2.0, and this is for communities in southern Madagascar. They're very, very remote communities, and a lot of the kids don't have a chance to go to school, and they were walking several miles, 10, 12 miles a day just to get to school, and a lot of the kids aren't allowed to even go past third grade, or what we would consider third grade. But by providing what the community needs and helping them find ways to uplift themselves, then they're coming in and also doing environmental education and helping the community know what's so special about their area with those lemurs, with the tortoises, and all the other biodiversity. So kind of meeting their needs as well as their wild needs there too. And then also working alongside of another organization so that they're reforesting. They're helping to grow and plant trees, which is so important.
Millions upon millions, of trees. I think Madagascar Biodiversity Project.
I think, am I right in that they're actually into the billion?
I'm not sure. We'll have to check
it's
Susie
huge.
And Ed, the founder of Madagascar Biodiversity Project, say, you know, these kids aren't going to slash and burn the forest that
yes.
they built, you know. And so
yeah.
we're just really and letting the local people feel proud of the natural resources that they have. And we've just got a 1 quick minute left, and it's just a great way to end today's show, is talking about why we love projects like Conservation Fusion so much, because every single project that we support at Blank Park Zoo abides by what we call the holistic view of conservation.
Yeah.
And what that means is that we want to support projects that are taking in consideration the health and welfare of individual animals, the health of animal populations, the health of the local environment, and most importantly, I think, the health, well-being, and aspirations of the local people. That is the only way that we feel that you can do sustainable conservation work, and engaging with the local communities and making it worth their while, and mm-hmm. and helping them with sustainable livelihoods for their families, because it doesn't matter if you live in the USA or in Madagascar or in Indonesia, everybody is just trying to take care of their families.
Correct. Yeah, that's really what it's about.
When you don't have opportunities, you have to deplete natural resources mm-hmm. to take care of your family. We would all do it in the same situation, so there's no finger pointing in conservation. But what we can do is take the opportunities and resources that we have, because we were lucky enough to be born in the U.S., and help folks around the world take care of their biodiversity, because we are part of nature, not separate from it. That was one of the fastest 28 minutes I've ever done, Ange. Thank you so much joining us, Ange.
Thank you
to everyone listening to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. Go to blankparkzoo.com, check out our YouTube channel and our Facebook and other social media pages for updates. Thank you, and see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.